Welcome, everybody, to Tokens of Wisdom. I'm your host, Dave Rothschild, a partner at Cole Freeman & Mallon, a boutique law firm based in San Francisco with one of the leading private fund practices on the West Coast. Before we dive into the episode, like always, please listen to the disclaimer at the end of the show. Nothing I say here is legal, investment, or tax advice. All right, today we're talking all about management company operating agreements. Now, this is one of the most underappreciated tasks that a new fund manager needs to complete. Management company operating agreements are the agreements among the principals of the management company, or companies, see episode 28, that control how those entities are governed, how economics are split, etc. It's easy to shove these aside during the frantic period leading up to a fund launch. They're not usually investor-facing, so your LPs don't care about them, and they're not gating items to the launch, so you can handle them once the more time-pressing investor-facing docs are done. Heck, I even advise clients trying to hit a tight launch window that this is a task they can take care of after the dust has settled. Now, I say it's not a gating item to the launch, and that's mostly true. The management companies will need operating agreements of some kind before the launch to satisfy the KYC processes of various service providers. Think banks, prime brokers, etc. But these KYC requirements are box-checking exercises. You can have a perfectly valid short-form operating agreement done in about 15 minutes that checks those KYC boxes, but that doesn't reflect the true commercial terms among the principals. What I've seen happen too often is that the principals do the short-form agreement, then the fund launches, and they get all excited that their fund launched, and they turn all their attention to managing its investments and LP relationships, that they forget to circle back to the full operating agreement after the dust has settled. They're kind of like kids on summer break, so excited to play all day that they forget their summer reading assignment. After all, they think, I get along great with my co-finder. Everything's sunshine and rainbows. I'm sure it'll always be that way, right? This is a mistake. Why is it a mistake? Because if something goes wrong in the relationship, there is no substantive agreement to fall back on. It's not that unusual for disagreements to arise among principals of a fund manager. Sometimes they're piddly little things, like whether to buy employees MacBooks or Dells. But sometimes they're more fundamental, like whether a partner should retain their equity in the firm after they retire. Entities designed to stand the test of time have foundational documents that guide decision-making when the inevitable storm clouds roll in. That's the role a solid operating agreement plays in a fund management business. Of course, no operating agreement can cover everything. So, what should your operating agreement cover? Well, every manager is unique, obviously, so you should figure out your own situation and talk to your own advisors about it. But there are at least four primary categories that any operating agreement worth its salt should cover. Those four areas are economics, corporate governance, exit provisions, and restrictive covenants. I'm going to run through them real fast one by one and talk about the major things to think about for each of these categories. So first, economics. Who owns what piece of the company? Sounds simple, right? Oftentimes it is simple. Maybe there's two founders and they're splitting everything 50-50. Easy peasy. But oftentimes it's not so simple. It can actually get rather complex. You could have vesting mechanisms, employee equity pools, different streams of income, mechanisms for dilution, etc. Most management companies are organized as limited partnerships or LLCs, and these are super flexible entities. They can be sliced and diced in different ways to fit different needs. For example, some managers allocate profits from different revenue streams differently. Maybe different people have exposure to management fee income than have exposure to performance allocation income. Maybe different percentages apply to proprietary investment activity. Maybe the proceeds of an M&A deal would be split differently than operating revenue. Depending on your specific situation, you should talk to your lawyers and make sure that your operating agreement accurately reflects the split of the economic pie that you're intending it to. Okay, that's economics. Moving on, number two, corporate governance. Who gets to make decisions for this entity? What decisions are so big that they require majority consent, or supermajority consent, or unanimous consent? Corporate governance provisions are always specific to the given manager's situation, but you want the agreement to be flexible enough so that the business can run efficiently. You don't want everybody to have to consent when someone needs to buy a new stapler, but tight enough that one partner can't go rogue and lock the company into a multi-year office lease on Kauai. Sounds kind of nice, though. So that's corporate governance. Exit provisions. Exit provisions can be triggered in several circumstances. Some are exciting, some are criminal, some are tragic, but all should at least be considered up front. Three common triggering events for exit provisions. One, resignation or termination. Someone just wants to walk away from the business. Two, I'm going to call this commission of brazenly bad acts. Some people call these cause events. What is the definition of a cause event? Who gets to invoke a cause event? What happens in response to a cause event, etc.? And three, death or severe disability that prevents you from continuing your pre-injury functions. If one of these triggering events happens to a partner in a management company, what happens to that partner's equity? Do they keep it? If they don't keep it, do they get bought out? If they do get bought out, how should their equity be valued? All of these are reasonably foreseeable events that are ripe for conflict generation. So agreeing up front on how you'll address them can save a lot of heartache down the line. Finally, restrictive covenants. This universe of provisions tackles whether and to what extent partners are restricted from conducting other business activities. Sometimes management companies are broadly permissive in this category. Sometimes they're extremely restrictive and require all of a principal's business time and attention to be focused on this management company. And sometimes it's something in between. Yeah, sure, you can run a painting studio on the side, but no competing fund managers. These agreements also commonly contain restrictions against soliciting firm clients or employees. Restrictions against using confidential information that belongs to the firm. Intellectual property-related restrictions, etc. If you include any of these restrictions, do they continue to apply after someone leaves the firm? If so, for how long? Does that cause any regulatory or legal issues in the jurisdiction where these principles are based? All things to consider with your co-founders and your advisors, especially your lawyers. Of course, there is an entire universe of additional considerations or provisions that might be relevant to a given manager in a given situation. But you should address all of those with your own lawyer who can advise on your own specific situation. Well, now that all that boring regulatory analysis is out of the way, it's time for the part you've all been waiting for. The legal disclaimer. In this show, I describe laws and regulations from a 10,000-foot view, and while this should be obvious to most, I need to say it nonetheless. This show is for informational purposes only, and nothing said here constitutes legal, investment, or tax advice. If you're thinking about starting a fund or you're curious about what's involved, this show is a good resource as you explore your options. But if you're going to pull the trigger and launch a fund, please engage an attorney to assist you. Thanks for listening to Tokens of Wisdom with Dave Rothschild. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please like, follow, and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. And tell your friends about us. Last but not least, if you have any questions about what we discussed today, feel free to send us an email at tow@colefreeman.com, spelled out in the show notes.